tell you now, when I come home feeling tired and beat, I go up where
the... All today's hits and yesterday's favourites.
Alive 90.5.
And now on Alive 90.5, here's the latest news brought to you by Pace, transforming places since 1978.
National Radio News.
Hello, I'm Laura Devoy. The Prime Minister has accused the Commissioner of the Ruby Princess Inquiry of overstepping the mark after a New South Wales health official was reduced to tears while giving evidence yesterday. Epidemiologist Kellyanne Ressler told the inquiry she was extremely sorry so many coronavirus cases were caused by thousands of passengers disembarking the ship in Sydney after being pressed by Commissioner Brett Walker. The inquiry, which was ordered by New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian, began its third day of hearings yesterday and is continuing today. Scott Morrison told Sydney radio station 2GB Mr Walker was out of line in his questioning.
To see her reduced to that under that sort of aggressive line of what it would appear questioning, you've got to get the balance right on this one, and I would hope that Mr Walker would reflect on that.
The federal opposition says the government has botched its wage subsidy scheme by making the eligibility criteria too confusing. The first payments in the JobKeeper scheme will be delivered today. 750,000 Australian organisations have already registered for the scheme, which will deliver businesses $1,500 a fortnight to help pay workers. Shadow Treasurer Jim Chalmers says by botching the scheme, the government is making itself part of the problem rather than the solution.
JobKeeper has the capacity to do remarkable things for millions of Australian workers, but too many of them have been left out and left behind by the government's decision to exclude casuals and other workers, the government's poor implementation of the scheme, the confusion that reigns.
The UK has overtaken Italy to record the highest coronavirus death toll in Europe. Frank Bonacorso reports.
A massive tragedy is how the UK Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab described the news that more than 29,000 UK residents had lost their lives to COVID-19. The toll across the country now exceeds Italy's by more than 100. And figures show the UK reached that figure much faster than its cross-continental neighbour. Some analysts maintain the real death toll is much higher than the figures suggest. The dubious landmark comes as the global death toll surpasses 250,000.
Supermarkets are under pressure to increase the price of all Australian dairy products to put more money in the pockets of struggling farmers. Coles and Woolworths increased the price of their home brand milk by 10 cents in 2018, but Federal Agriculture Minister David Littleproud wants that levy to extend to other dairy products. Mr Littleproud says he wrote to the supermarkets earlier this year, but has given them time to respond because of coronavirus-driven panic buying. He says now is the time to focus on helping embattled dairy farmers.
They've done pretty well out of COVID-19. They've stocked the shelves and they are making a quid. And it's important they now review their pricing mechanisms with processes and ensure that a fair price has gotten back to the dairy farmer.
In Western Australia, tens of thousands of properties are without power after strong winds and heavy rain lashed parts of the state's south. Energy crews are working to restore supplies to all customers, with tens of thousands without electricity across the Perth metropolitan area and the southern part of the network.
National Radio News is supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute for Journalism and Ideas and the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.org.au.
And now for the latest weather on Alive 90.5, brought to you by Concise Finance, your local mortgage broker. It's currently 18 degrees, looking towards a top today of 22, mostly sunny with light winds. The sun will set tonight at 10 minutes past 5. Looking for the rest of the week, mostly sunny on Thursday, 9 to 24. Friday, sunny, 13 to 27. Saturday, mostly sunny, 14 to 25. And a bit cooler on Sunday, mostly sunny, 9 to 18 degrees. The moon is a waxing gibbous with full moon tomorrow, the 7th of May.
The updated traffic, brought to you by Fernwood Gym of Seven Hills and North Rocks on Alive 90.5.
Bladesville, Victoria Road between Sunnyside Street and Salter Street. There's some emergency roadwork. One of three westbound lanes closed. It's lane one. Earlwood, Bixley Road between Northcott Street and Cross Street. There's a crash between a car and a bicycle, unfortunately. Moderate traffic conditions with one or two northbound lanes closed. Expect delays and exercise caution. And Bankstown, Stacey Street between Stanley Street, Selby Avenue and Macaulay Avenue. Change traffic conditions. They're scheduled lane closures for the week as they do a lot of roadworks around that area. It's 6 minutes past 11 and you're on a live 90.5 with Mario on Business Insights. And good morning again, Mario.
Good morning, Darren. And, you know, like first hour just gone quickly with Ramambala from the Hexagon RBA. And to all our listeners, I'd like to say thank you for tuning in. To all our sponsors, thank you for being the part of this lovely radio station. And as I mentioned before, this show is not just about me and it's not just about people who can provide you best insights and tips from Sydney, but as well around the globe. And today I'm very fortunate enough to have in the studio, well, online, Dr. Paul Clayton. Dr. Paul Clayton is a graduate summa cum laude in medical pharmacology from Edinburgh University prior to obtaining his PhD. He's a former chair of the Forum of Food and Health UK and senior scientific advisor to UK Government Committee on the Safety of Medicines, and he's a county fellow of the Institute of Food Brain Behaviour in Oxford. He works with leading doctors and clinical scientists, essential clinical expertise in many countries, designing and supervising preclinical and clinical trials of pharmaco-nutritional interventions. Dr. Clayton, as well, he's an author of the books, including Health Defense After Atkins, which is going to be good for me because we're going to talk about dieting, Natural Defense, Out of the Fire, and Let Your Food Be Your Pharmaco-Nutrition. So, Dr. Paul Clayton, thank you for tuning with us tonight. Today, sorry, it's tonight, it's evening in your place on Live 90.5 with Darren Mario.
Indeed, good morning to you. Although, as you quite rightly in saying, it's good night here.
Yeah, so you're in Florida, you're in Florida, right, Dr. Paul?
Well, at the moment, I travel extensively.
Yes.
And I was actually in Kazan, in Tatarstan, in Russia.
Oh my God.
The word came through that the international flights were going to be stopped. And it was very complicated and very difficult getting back to Moscow and then flying into, eventually, to JFK, I think 2 hours before the boom dropped. Otherwise, I would have been stranded in Russia, which isn't the worst place in the world to be stranded. I mean, there's a lot of very interesting health developments that are going on there.
Okay.
But I have work to do back here in the United States, and I was just able to slip back in before the boom dropped.
Oh, that's very good. But Dr. Paul Clayton, once again, thank you for joining us. To all our listeners in Sydney on Live 90.5, Dr. Paul Clayton, do you mind, Paul, to tell us who is Paul Clayton? Before we start to talk about dieting and why Nutella is good and why we need to have more sugars and all these things. So, like, who is the Paul?
Who is Dr. Paul Clayton?
That's correct, yeah.
You start off with the difficult questions. Well, you already described me on paper. And I suppose maybe the one way of talking about where I've been, what I've been doing, is I started many, many years ago to study medicine.
Yes.
At Edinburgh University, which back in the day was the best place to study medicine. And I sort of started moving sideways. I did the first 3 years of the medical degree, and it was all very straightforward, very easy, and frankly, very dull. And I was then given an opportunity to move into the medical sciences and began to study clinical pharmacology, which in fact is what my PhD is in.
Yep.
And then I was studying, really, when you talk about clinical pharmacology, what you actually mean is pharmaceutical or synthetic pharmacology.
Mm-hmm.
So we studied drugs, and I was involved in, you know, drug design, drug development, pharmacokinetics, development and delivery systems, all that kind of stuff. But all this time, I had been looking at the world of natural pharmacology as well, that is the pharmacological effects of foods and food derivatives. And the reason I got involved in that was that in my first year of medical school, I'd fallen deeply in love with a veterinary student, beautiful girl.
Yes. And, okay, now we're talking, eh? Yes.
Very important motivational factor. And so I started going to some of her classes, and I couldn't help but notice that the veterinary professors were talking a lot about the importance of animal feed and nutrition, both in keeping the animals healthy and in treating various conditions that they might subsequently develop. And so I went back to my professors over in the medical school and said, look, we're just doing all this pharmacology, it's all drugs. Why don't we cover any of this natural pharmacology? And I was dismissed. I mean, I was, you know, a young, uppity medical student with nothing much to say for myself. And I was told that nutrition was basically women's work.
Yeah.
And, you know, the vets might be involved in it, but it wasn't serious medicine. Medicine in the 60s.
Yes.
It was really all about drug development, drug discovery. That was where the excitement was. Magic bullets, a very masculine framework, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I then started, I sort of split my scientific career down the middle. During the day, I was working in synthetic pharmacology, and in the evenings, I was learning as much as I could about natural pharmacology. And as the years passed, I began to realize that natural pharmacology was not only more diverse, it was actually more important in determining your health expectancy. Pharmaceutical pharmacology, which medicine has really focused on for the last century or so, has given us a very wide range of a large portfolio of drugs which are very specific, very, very toxic. We kill a lot of our patients, and very expensive, good business, but they're not good at keeping people healthy. Mostly what they do is they treat the symptoms of disease, and those diseases tend to get worse even during treatment, which is why we call them degenerative. And what I realized was that in the background, public health was actually deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just me. I mean, lots of other people were saying the same thing. The incidence of cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, allergies, autoimmune diseases, all of them are getting more common. And we were seeing them in younger and younger groups of patients. And the pharmaceutical model had nothing to offer. So I began looking at the relationship between diet and health expectancy. And
now we're talking to Sel. Tell us this dieting is. Sorry to interrupt you now, Dr. Clayton.
Yeah, sure.
I was watching one documentary, right? I'm going to say publicly name, and it was a two parts and sort of changing my life. It's called Fat, Sick, Nearly Dead. Darren, did you watch that one?
No, I missed that one.
No, it's a guy. It's Aussie guy. Actually, what he did, you know, he took the juicer and blender. He gone to US, you know what I mean, and was juicing for 60 days, lost the weight. He replenished his health and everything else. And, you know, the guy was just looking like he make a business from this.
Amazing.
So, Dr. Clayton, am I talking that, do you understand what you're saying correctly? That nature is actually our best drug medicine, how would you call, little helper, rather than just synthetic drugs?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's far more potent, far more powerful, far more useful, far more curative than anything that has come out of the pharmaceutical industry. And you can see this in detail when you go to look at the so-called blue zones. Now, these are zones, islands in space, or one or two of them in time, they don't exist anymore, where people lived a very different lifestyle. They were more physically active. They didn't eat any processed or ultra-processed food. They were burning a lot of calories, eating a lot of unprocessed foods, which were nutrient-dense and calorie-light. And what you see when you look at those populations is that they don't get old in the way that we do. They don't develop the so-called diseases of civilization in the way that we do. They retain their physical, intellectual, sexual well-being until almost right till the end, and then tend to die very quickly, usually of a fulminating infection. Whereas we're being chronically poisoned by our lifestyles, and very specifically by our diets, which give us chronic degenerative disease. They give us inflammation, malnutrition, dysbiosis, and that is what is behind the truly appalling public health figures that you see in Australia and we see in North America and increasingly in Europe.
Dr. Clayton, I just want to ask you something which is very, very interesting while listening to you. And, you know, I mean, you're the man of expertise, like, you know, you're academic and plus your research, and, you know, you're doing all these things. When or where or how human society failed our lifestyle, I would say, right? You know, I mean, I'm born in communism, and I remember my mom, she was making everything, you know, down in like all the soups and all the stews, like, you know, just eat those greens, eat these greens. It's like, I just want to have a meat, you know what I mean? So when, where, and how did we fail human society, and we start rely more on drugs and less on the food, and processed more food and unprocessed food, or whatever would you call it, say.
Well, you know, it's hard to generalize because what you see is a different time course in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
One of the biggest blue zones that we know of is the so-called mid-Victorian blue zone in England, period 1850 to 1900. It was a period of enormous good health.
Yeah.
They hardly had any chronic degenerative disease at all. Mm-hmm. And then that comes to an end because the British Empire has by that stage become so successful because, you know, the army, the navy, the workforce are so incredibly strong, resilient and healthy that Britain, which is a small, damp little island off the west coast of Europe, has by that stage conquered more than a third of the globe.
Yes.
So what happens is their victory contains within it the seeds of their own destruction because now they're starting to bring back terrible things like tobacco, like large amounts of sugar. And in a very short period of time, British standards of public health fall, and they fall very dramatically, so much so that within about a generation, they've lost an average 6 inches of height. I mean, it's really quite
extreme. No, seriously? Is that why?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the funny thing is that the small aristocracy who held on to a more traditional diet were much healthier and much taller, which meant that during the First World War, the officers, who, most of whom are sort of minor aristocrats, were about 6 inches taller than the men, the enlisted men that they were commanding, and so they were very easily picked off by the German snipers. It was not a good idea for them to be so healthy and as well developed as they were.
I think that Darren is dying to ask a question.
Yeah.
Dr. Clayton. Dr. Clayton, apologies. Darren has a question for you because we're just looking at each other.
I wanted to comment on that 6 inches. That's amazing. I wasn't really aware of that, but it makes sense. And even if you think of Blackadder and the series back then and all the aristocrats leaders of that army, it was very interesting. But Dr. Clayton, can you comment for me? I have a personal issue for my health in that I'm intolerant to sulfites and that's probably built up over the time. And I think specifically in the US, there's always food that's generally regarded as safe or gras, as they say.
Safe, yeah.
And it probably comes down to the fact that all these additives, generally people can deal with them, but it's not good. And those who are on the fringes, like myself, we can suffer a lot. What do you think about that? And have you studied much about that sort of issue in food and diet?
Well, you can't really talk about additives as a single category. You have to be a bit more granular because, you know, certain additives that would include in that category vitamin E, vitamin C, various minerals. I mean, not all the additives are potentially problematic. And I would say that the American diet in general, which we know as the SAD diet, the standard American diet, is probably one of the worst in the world right now. But not only for the reason that it's full of surfactants and stabilizers and preservatives and all the rest of it. It's because they have a truly appalling intake of ultra-processed foods. They're probably number one in the world today. About 60% of their calories are in the form of ultra-processed foods, and these are these modern industrial fodder, I won't call them foods, that, you know, like Pringles and breakfast cereals and ice cream, that kind of nonsense.
Look, it was one of
Cocoa Pops.
Cocoa Pops, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I hope I'm not bashing your favorite food.
No, you don't.
It's not healthy for you. And there's tons of evidence that the more of these ultra-processed foods you eat, the fatter you get, the sicker you get, the more quickly you age, the more likely you are to have diabetes and cancer and premature death and all kinds of things like that. So America leads the world. About, as I said, almost two-thirds of all their calories are consumed in the form of this kind of fodder. And you see the results in their really appalling public health. Life expectancy has been falling for the last 4 years. And you're talking about a nation which accounts for 5% of the global population but are consuming in excess of 50% of all pharmaceutical drugs. Deeply, deeply sick. Now, guess who comes in at number two?
That's a staggering. That's a staggering.
It's terrible. But then, you know, Australians come in next because if, you know, the George Institute for Global Health, which is a very well-respected institute, their latest findings are that the percentage of Australian packaged foods, which are ultra-processed, are probably between around 55%, maybe a little higher. And your packaged food environment is full of highly processed foods loaded down with sugar and fat and salt and with practically no nutritional value. And that is what has created this public health catastrophe in Australia, where over one in five Australian adults have now been diagnosed as suffering from heart disease. I mean, I think it's about two-thirds of adults, 25% of Australian children are overweight and obese, and at least 50% of Australians have a chronic degenerative disease.
So, Dr. Clayton, what can we do about this? And it's a great time at the moment with us all being isolated in Australia. We're actually seeing that lots of people are getting out, walking, cycling, cycle paths are like congested, and there's a bit of conflict, and that's great. But can we take an opportunity right here to really take the bull by the horn, so to say, and actually change our perception of what we should eat and how we should exercise?
Yes, I think this is a great opportunity. That's the silver lining of the COVID-19 cloud. If it makes people more aware of the fact that nutritional status is important in determining whether you're going to get sick or not, or perhaps die, then I think that that will be a fairly positive outcome from this politically manufactured pandemic. Taking more exercise is great. Taking more exercise and then feeding your increased appetite with more ultra-processed or junk foods is not. That'll undo all the good that the exercise will create. But if this changing in lifestyle means that people will start to cut down on their intake of ultra-processed foods, then I think that will pay off big time. You're going to see huge improvements in Australian public health. But there's a problem here. There's a very small number of multinational food companies who account for almost 80% of the global food space. And if you look at the damage they're doing to public health all over the world, they're now killing more people than the tobacco industry.
They say smoking kills. But Dr. Clayton, we should give you some break, you know, because we didn't let you stop talking for 22 minutes and let's go take a short break, a few minutes, and I will come back to more with more questions to yourself, because this is a very interesting topic and Darren and I really have the burning desire to ask you more questions. So we'll take a short break. You're listening Business Insights with Mario online 90.5, and Dr. Paul Clayton's with us online, so stay online, Dr. Clayton. Okay.
You know what I mean? I Are you in the market to hire an honest, reliable, long-term plumber? If so, you want to look out for one that is fully licensed and insured, has your interest at heart, displays professionalism, and is branded. Neat, clean, and tidy, and treats your domain with respect and care. Look no further. Waterflow Plumbing is your plumber. Fully licensed and insured in plumbing, draining, gas fitting, roof plumbing, waterproofing, and mini excavation. Call Bradley on 0488 300480 or email info@waterflowplumbing.com.au. Waterflow Plumbing, station sponsor.
It really hurts us when a loved one passes on, but it's nice to know that their memory will be well respected in their final resting place. Castlebrook Memorial Park has looked after the families of loved ones for over 50 years. You can visit them and talk to their family service advisors almost any day from 8:30am to 5pm. Their website is castlebrook.com.au. Castlebrook Memorial Park is at Windsor Road, Rouse Hill, and is a proud sponsor of Alive 90.5.
The Hills, Parramatta and Cumberland.
Alive 90.5.
It's 27 minutes past 11 and 18 and a half degrees, and we're on Business Insights with Mario.
Well, Darren, thank you so much, and we are truly, truly grateful having Dr. Paul Clayton on our show, who is alive from US right now, this very, very moment, and sharing with us what mistakes we're doing in our health, protecting our health, and, you know, most importantly, how we don't eating well. Now, Dr. Clayton, I know that you're the great researcher. You published the books, and you say something after the Atkins. Is that the name of the book you wrote it?
Well, it is, but that was written a long time ago.
It's, okay, is this related to Atkins' diet?
Well, at that time, the Atkins diet was fairly popular. It's rather faded now, and I wrote a critique of it.
Okay, so
share
with us why this diet did not work. Like I hear the Atkins diet, which is popular in Australia, I must say, still today. Keto diet, you know, like diet with Nutella, which I'm practicing. But, you know, I mean, like, why these diets or those books don't work? Or maybe why they work?
I think because you're living in what is known as an obesogenic environment. And by that I mean a lifestyle and environment which in general encourages overweight and obesity. And you can break that down into two factors. And one is the fact that we live at levels of very low physical activity. If you go back a century or so, well, what we find is that our grandparents and great-grandparents were burning almost twice as many calories as we do today because everything they did was done by hand. They were physically far more active than us. Many of us, especially those of us who live in cities and towns, are getting by at around 2,000 calories a day, which may not be more than 40% above basic metabolic rate. That's astonishingly low levels of physical activity. We're very, very sedentary. And we are permitted to be very sedentary because of the internal combustion engine and information technology, which means that most of us work with our fingers, not with our backs or our hands any longer. So they've got that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, now that the perfect storm is completed by a food environment, which is an absolute disaster. The ultra-processed foods that I was talking about earlier are very light in nutritional value, but they're stuffed full of empty calories. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to quote Professor Bruce Neal from the George Institute, who was I was interviewed, I think, 6 months or so ago. And he said something that was absolutely spot on. He said, it was little wonder we're in the midst of an obesity epidemic. Half of all packaged foods are junk foods we should only be eating occasionally. Industry tells us it's about personal choice and free will. But Australians haven't chosen to be obese. They're obese because selling cheap, unhealthy food everywhere all the time is how industry profits are maximized. So basically, the average consumer, the average Joe or Joanna, is a victim. They're being victimized by modern technology and by a food industry which is grotesquely irresponsible and completely out of control. A food industry which privatizes its profits and socializes the costs which fall squarely on our shoulders in the shape of terrible public health and spiraling healthcare costs. Okay. So I don't blame the Australian citizen. I don't blame the individual. They're caught in the middle of a web of negative factors which they have very little power to control.
I have the question for you, Dr. Clayton. So why the food tastes so good? Why we want it more? Why? Okay, I can't even explain this. You know, like,
No. You've already explained it. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, but why it tastes so good? You know, you want it more? You know, like I wake up 2 o'clock in the morning. It's like, I don't know, like, I have no diabetes or nothing. I wake up 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and it's like I just need something sweet in my stomach. I wake up deliberately and purposely from my bed and I said, I need something sweet.
Because you've been trained to do that, like a little Pavlovian dog.
Okay.
Look, I'm not, I don't want to be rude to you, but this is a general problem that we have. The multinationals are completely unethical. And what they use is a technology called bliss point research. Now, in the olden days, when we designed a new biscuit or a new brand of chocolate cake or whatever the heck it was, give a panel. Well, then most people do. Yeah. They give a panel of consumers different samples, and then I give them a notebook and say, which ones do you like? Which has the highest scores? We take the notebooks back, tote up the scores, and the highest score as would be the product variation that we then go to work on. Problem is that people are forgetful, people lie, they get confused, and that type of consumer testing isn't that accurate. So what the food industry does now, they will take a subject, they'll put their head inside a CT scanner, feed them the food, and then we can actually watch your pleasure centers light up.
No way, really? Can you do this?
Yeah, at this point, and you cannot hide, you cannot lie, we know exactly what it is that makes your pleasure centers light up to the maximum, whatever combination of sugar and salt or fat or crunch it is. And then that is engineered to the next generation of food. And the result is that we have a whole bunch of these industrial foods now which are addictive.
So how are we going to overcome this? Please, darling.
Yeah, Dr. Clayton, I'm just thinking sometimes, like, I go through the day and I'm getting to a point where I really think I need a bit of good fat for the brain to fire. Is that conditioning, or is that something where the brain does need a little bit of fat, and can we balance that? What are your thoughts there?
That's a good one, Darren.
You're probably not eating the right kinds of fat anyway, because
you need
some saturated fats, you need some cholesterol, you need omega-3s and omega-6s and omega-9s, but if you look at the fats that are present in processed foods today, they're all the wrong ones. It's a mixture, an imbalance of the different fatty acids guaranteed to cause chronic inflammation. And chronic inflammation, as you probably know by now, is the root of all degenerative disease. It's what drives cancer and heart disease and dementia, hugely important causative factor. And that's one of the reasons why a diet containing large amounts of these ultra-processed foods is guaranteed to kill you before your time.
So
what is the best diet? Share with us some pills or drugs or some chocolate cakes or whatever. You know, I mean, chocolate cakes are just for me, so...
If your preferred solution is a chocolate cake, that's between you and your conscience and your waistline.
that's what the Mario Becker says. But I go with the Darren. So what would you like? As a profession, let's just Darren question, which is very valid. How would you change this thing? We need to go in the shops. Somebody told me not a long time ago, don't go in shops. Don't go shopping with an empty stomach. And I was like, what do you mean don't go shopping with empty stomach? So there's so many of these small tips, but am I wrong? But it's like you're the profession. So please, if you can educate our listeners, what's the best way, dieting-wise?
Yeah, no, I think everybody knows don't go shopping for food when you're hungry because you'll make wrong decisions which aren't going to be good for you in the long term. I don't necessarily think that it's a good idea to tell everyone to eat the same kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Not everybody needs remedial nutrition. What I prefer to do is to do some very basic testing. I'll take a blood spot, which is a little needle stick in your thumb, and you put a couple of drops of blood on a filter paper. And we then send that back to a WHO-affiliated lab at Oslo University, one or two others. They're all independent third-party labs.
Yeah.
And then we will look at your lipid profile. Now, not the lipids in your plasma, because that's really fairly useless. They change after every meal. We're looking at the lipid profile of your cell membranes, and specifically your red blood cells. And that gives us not just a snapshot of what you ate half an hour ago, but it gives us an overview of the different types of fats you've been eating in different amounts, different ratios for the last 4 months or so. And that's much more meaningful. We can then, once we've looked at that, we can then tell you, do you have a ratio that is associated with inflammatory stress, meaning that you're at risk of chronic degenerative disease, or are you in the green zone? And I'm not going to suggest to someone who's already in the green zone that they take, more of the omega-3s or the polyphenols. They probably don't need it. So I think that from my perspective, I think the best way to go is to do some basic preliminary testing and find out what people need and then address those issues.
How do people, somebody like say me Mario Beckett, you know, me want to go do this the testing, so how are we going to do this? Go to my GP or through you, or what I need to do?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different analytes that you could look at, but if you find someone who's got a very high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, what that tells you is that they're eating a lot of processed foods and ultra-processed foods. And then from that, I already know that they're going to have type B malnutrition and they're going to have dysbiosis. And that means that they are moving inevitably towards chronic degenerative disease. Mm-hmm. If they don't already have it in a clinical form, they already have it in a they probably have it in a preclinical form. You know, they don't yet have an osteoporotic fracture, but they're losing mineral, calcium, magnesium salts from their bones, and they're moving towards that fracture point. They may not yet have had a heart attack, but atheroma is growing in their arteries silently and slowly, and in a decade or so's time, that's going to surface as their first heart attack. So I like to start.
Yeah,
sorry, go on.
Well, I was reading, you know, I mean, like, you know, every time when I go or see commercials, it says have the omega 3, 6, 9, whatever, 12, Darren. You know, I mean, it's good for your heart, krill oil or whatever it is. It's like you're never gonna have the heart attack. You're never gonna die if you have those oils. Did you saw this or that commercial, Darren?
Yes. But this whole area is quite complex. I mean, fish oil is no good for you at all. Eating oily fish is, but we've done about 26, 27 randomized prospective clinical trials which show that taking fish oil capsules doesn't help you at all. It's absolutely a waste of time and money. And the reason is that there's a lot more in oily fish, mackerel, salmon, herring, than there is in fish oil. When the fish oil industry...
So you mean the raw food, right? The fresh food. It's more accepted than just the pills, right?
Well, no, it's not a question of it being accepted. What was protective in oily fish, it isn't just the omega-3s. When you take out the omega-3s, you're half right, but you're all wrong, because the omega-3s don't work unless you also have a group of compounds which are called fluorotannins. I mean, sorry about the technical stuff, they're fat-soluble polyphenols. And that actually works together with the omega-3s. What we do in our practice in, I think, about 25 different countries now, We routinely administer the omega-3 long-chain fatty acids from fish oil with these fat-soluble polyphenols. And what we're seeing is that people respond in a way that we've never seen before, in a way that they don't respond to fish oil. So the fish oil industry is a billion-dollar confidence trick, really.
So tell me something.
Whether it's from krill.
Yeah.
Or whether it's seal oil, krill oil, or salmon oil, it doesn't make any difference. If it doesn't have the polyphenols, you're wasting your money.
So, like, what's the benefits if you injected these things, omega-3 and that other one, salty, whatever? I can't even finish.
Polyphenols.
That's one.
Polyphenols.
So what are you like? Can I be more slimmer, or stronger, or my brain works better, my heart?
Well, what will happen is if you take the long-chain omega-3s and the polyphenols, the same combination that you actually find in the fish, when you do that, chronic inflammation stops. And when chronic inflammation stops, at last the body has a chance to start healing. And now, instead of progressing down the road of degenerative disease towards the first clinical appearance of symptoms, now your metabolism has been rebalanced, rectified, if you like. And now, instead of being on a one-way ticket to disease and oblivion, frankly, you are on a totally different track, and you're now going to live up to your health potential. I'm not saying that this is a cure-all. It isn't. But it is a way of very substantially affecting the course of your life and improving your health expectancy.
Okay, that's interesting. So is that including dieting, or how are you administering that oil? That is going to repeat other part, omega-3 plus that other one. And, you know, is this like a top of the pills, or how are you doing this?
Well, look, I'm a pharmacologist. I really don't care how you get these nutrients into your diet. And if you want to do it by eating, three portions or four portions of oily fish a week, wild salmon and herring, mackerel and Manhattan and fish like that. If you want to do it that way, that's great. I'm absolutely happy with people who decide who want to get their nutrients from foods, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. For those who can and actually enjoy that type of food, great. If you don't like those types of foods, and if you are trying to reduce your calorific intake because you know, you're just not burning that many calories, then it really is much easier to take exactly the same combination of nutrients in a supplemental form. It has the same effect, and it's just a different delivery system. As I said, as a pharmacologist, I don't care how you get these compounds into your body. It's exactly the same.
Well, Dr. Paul Clayton, I'd like to say thank you so much for this lovely interview in the last 40 minutes. And like those who are interested for you to talk to you and how they can reach you, and I mean they want to discuss the healthy stuff. And I know it's very late where you are right now, so you know I mean how they can come in touch with you and learn more benefits of being that omega 3 and other things. You know how the dieting of food works for the benefits.
If anyone is interested in knowing a little bit more about this,
yes,
there's a couple of books out there which you can find on Amazon. One of them is called Out of the Fire, and I don't really recommend that for most people. It's pretty complex, lots of references, and it's really designed more for medical students, doctors, yep, nutritionists, and geeks. What can I say? But there's a much simpler version. It's a more user-friendly version, which is called Let Your Food Be Your Pharmaconutrition, and that really is a distillate of all the science.
Yes.
And just said, look, if you want to be healthy, here's how to do it. Here's how to cook. Here's the foods to choose. Here's what you should avoid. Here's how you can improve your nutrition.
That's your book, right, Dr. Paul Clayton? That's your book.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch of books of mine out there, but those two are probably the most relevant right now.
Given, Dr. Clayton, that we're all in isolation at the moment and some people are actually probably eating healthier because they have to cook at home.
Who's eating healthier?
What can we do better? So we talked about exercising, but is there a chance also to look at how we eat and how we buy fresh foods? And I know myself,
yes,
we're doing much more cooking at home in isolation. What can our guests do? They can read books, but what can they do tonight as they cook dinner?
Well, I don't know what you have in your larder and your refrigerator to start with, but as a general principle, I would say stop buying and eating these terrible ultra-processed foods. That's the very first step that everybody should take, and it's a very quick and easy way to improve your health prospects. Making your own foods from scratch, working with basic produce, is a huge improvement, and it almost doesn't matter what those basic ingredients are. You're going to end up with foods that are healthier, more nutritious, and less calorifically dense. They're foods that will satisfy your appetite more, and they're just going to protect you in ways that the industrial fodder, you know, from all the usual brand names, absolutely does not. So it's a very simple change.
Learn
how to cook.
Yeah, does it mean
if
that
you don't already know?
Yes, very good. And I love cooking, and that's a good tip. But do we need to have our own farm gardens, or can we actually go to the local supermarket to eat fresh as well?
I think that if you can, if you're working with fruits and vegetables, if you can get hold of heirloom varieties, what we see is that very often they have a superior phytonutrient density. So typically the older strains of fruits and vegetables contain rather higher levels of compounds called polyphenols, carotenoids, and xanthophylls, and one or two other things like that. And they
the names, I'm sorry, Dr. Paul Clayton, I was just like, you know, when you talk about these names, you know, I mean, I was like, I can't remember all of this. Is that more greens? Is more red fruit?
No.
No?
It's more old.
More fruits and vegetables in general. But if you can get hold of the heirloom strains, that is, you know, the traditional varieties as opposed to some of the modern ones, what the plant breeders have done more recently is to come up with fruits and vegetables that are larger because that's financial, and sweeter because they know that that's what consumers have been taught to enjoy. But if you are creating a plant where the genes have been switched on and off in a way that makes it or forces it to produce more sugar, it has less energy available to it to produce the nutrients that are so important to your health. So going back to the traditional, the heirloom varieties is in general a pro-health thing to do, if you can find them.
That's very interesting. So, like, I'm just blown away because I said I never heard a conversation about food and you know, dieting and how to feel better or well-being. I still do till today, because on the market there is a lot of gurus who talks about dieting, nutritionists, and everything else. And I truly believe that they are going
like in circle, you know what I mean? Everybody repeating each other and, you know, have the 10 liters of water per day, you know, just wake up in the morning and, you know, I have the jar of Nutella for the breakfast. I'm just lying, but jokes aside, but, you know, have this, this, and this, and this. But suddenly, you know, comes an expert like yourself and, you know, he brings to the game the omega-3 plus all these things you mentioned before. But, you know, I mean, tell us, Dr. Paul Creighton, how are you helping people?
Well, for a start, I'm a little bit nervous about nutritional gurus, and I certainly don't want to be one. I'm a scientist, and I try and work in an evidence-based way. Before I make any kind of recommendations, I want to have a pretty clear understanding as to how these things work, what the mechanism of action is. As a pharmacologist, that's where a lot of the science is focused. You want to know how these things work before you start making blanket recommendations. And there's an awful lot of people floating around on the scene at the moment who are saying, do this, do that, do this, do that, with no possible or a visible rationale behind it that I can see. Mm. There's a lot of fashion in so-called nutritional advice, and a lot of it is extremely bad advice. It's illogical. There are some very basic things that people can do to improve their health prospects, and I've covered some of them. If you want to go into this in more detail, then there are some very specific things that you can do, which will improve the body's ability to heal, to regenerate, and to perform physically and mentally in a more effective way.
So that's the expertise you can offer to listeners around Australia and the globe if they contact you, being well, to heal, to feel better, and there's other aspects you already mentioned before. Is that correct?
Well, absolutely. And if I could give you a blog address, you don't have to even buy the books. You can simply go online and have a look at some of the blogs on my website.
Yeah, please share. Can you share the domain name or the website or the blog name?
Yeah, of course. It's drpaulclayton.eu, and it's spelt drpaulclayton, all one word, .eu. And there's an awful lot of stuff there which cover issues like the way in which food affects your mood, the way in which what you eat affects physical performance and stamina, resistance to infection, propensity to degenerative disease, how you can use foods to reduce these problems and heal yourself and make yourself feel better. But it's all referenced. It's all very, very science-based.
That's very interesting. So you're inviting all our listeners to go on your website, as you mentioned, and you know to see, you know, entire process and to come in touch with you, because truly, boy, there's a lot of people who's gonna need more healing process, you know what I mean, during the lockdown, you know what I mean, that we have the nutritions, maybe less, maybe more. I know in Australia, as Darren says, like Darren drives the, you know, Tour de France, you know what I mean, he's on a bike. I tried to walk, you know what I mean, 2 kilometers, but you know I mean, after a few days, you know, it's that feeling, you know, with that emotional feeling, you know what I mean, of the lockdown, it's make the bigger pressure. But I'd like to say, because we are just about to wind up our interview, Dr. Paul, I'd like to say, you know, thank you on behalf of the Live 90.5 Business Insights with Mario, you know, for being our lovely guest, you know, I mean, sharing with us knowledge. And we're certainly going to have you more on our show, because this is a topic, you know, I mean, where the expert can share with us and not the gurus. So once again, your interview is going to be published on Live 90.5. .com.au website today afternoon or maybe tomorrow. And to our listeners, you know, who are interested to be in touch with Dr. Paul Creighton, can you say again your website, because English is not my good thing?
Well, the book Let Your Food Be Your Pharmaconutrition is now available, I think, in about 30 different languages.
Okay.
So, well, what's your language of preference?
My, well, it'd be English, but then I'm Croatian by background, so, like, you know, I mean, that's what I prefer, English. Okay. I'm learning English more than.
It is also available in Croatian, I'm happy to tell you.
Oh, God, that's a good...
and your website again, your blog website, Dr. Creighton?
It is drpaulclayton.eu.
drpaulclayton.eu.
Thank you very much, Dr. Paul Creighton.
Thank you very much for being our guest here.
We look forward to speaking to you in the near future.
I'd be happy to come back. And if you want to drill down into any specific area of health in a lot more detail, we can do that.
Thank you very much. You're on Live 90.5. It's 9 minutes to midday. And Mario's Business Insights.
90.5. With over 30 years' experience, you'll be in great hands at Granny Flat Leaders. The dream starts in your backyard. Our vision is to combine investment, design and construction to make your dream come to life. We want to help inspire you to make a change and experience great life improvements through Granny Flat Leaders. Call us now on 8076 1613 and ask us how, or visit www.grannyflatleaders.com.au. Sponsor of the Jukebox Jive program.
Are you an experienced disability care worker? Then why not consider the benefits of working for Global, the leading disability care agency in Sydney. Agency Work offers variety to work where and when you want. If you have previous disability care work experience, a first aid certificate and driver's license, then Global is the agency for you. Global offers great rates of pay and free training courses to its own disability care staff. Check out positions vacant on the website at globalcarestaff.com or call today on 1800 009 292. That's globalcarestaff.com or call 1800 009 292.
Station sponsor.
Hi, it's Brendan Nottle from the Salvation Army here. This is a heartbreaking, overwhelming crisis, and today, as every day, the Salvos are doing what we can to help people experiencing their own personal disaster. In the midst of turmoil, you can help those hardest hit. Whether they're ill, have lost their job and facing poverty, or simply lonely, you can give practical help and hope. Go to salvationarmy.org.au to give to the Red Shield Appeal now, and please help us leave no one in need.
Station sponsor, the Salvation Army.
To help stop the spread of viruses like the flu or coronavirus, good hygiene is essential. That starts with washing your hands thoroughly with soap and water. Whenever you cough, sneeze or blow your nose, prepare food or eat, care for someone sick, touch your face or use the toilet. Remember to cough or sneeze into your arm or a tissue. Bin the tissue and wash your hands. Together we can help stop the spread and stay healthy. Visit health.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
You're listening to the sound of Alive 90.5. Alive 90.5.
You're never know what you can do until you get it up inside of you, got to go.
Alive 90.5.